So it is December 7th, and it's about 12:30. I'm in Berkeley finishing up a tasty meal, but the restaurants have closed down, so we're eating in J.C. Orton's car. J.C. is a man who distributes street spirits, distributes food, distributes goodwill and positive thoughts. What else do you distribute, J.C.?
Love, concern, and hospitality.
Dig it. And you've been doing this for, what, 20 years now?
It's almost 25 now.
And this is with the Catholic Worker?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You have your Catholic Worker van here, and you, of course, are distributing the Street Spirit newspaper to vendors. And you do this every morning? You show up at Pete's Cafe? Or
Pete's Coffee up on Chattuck Avenue. That's it.
And folks come, they get papers, and then they sell them for whatever they can get, and are $2 is the standard price?
Yeah, that's it. And this time of year, Thanksgiving month, which is November, and Christmas month, which is December, people that are selling the paper don't necessarily pick up $2. They're regular customers out there, and people that are concerned about the whole situation don't necessarily slip them $2. Sometimes it's a 5 or a 10 or a 20, and we have the occasional presence of Ben Franklin shows up from time to time.
Hit the streets myself. You also this time have a novel. Is this by an individual who's been outside herself or himself?
You'd have to read the preface on that.
I mean, you haven't read this book yourself?
I just read the first chapter of it, that's all.
How is it? What's your feeling?
He has an interesting way of writing things.
And the name of the book is, what is it, Eastern Span, and the author is somebody I can't read the name of, but once I find some glasses,
Rick
I will.
Hollis.
Rick Hollis. Thank you, Gloria.
You've got to set him up with some new glasses.
And so you also, I've been asking you about People's Park and how it, you say, as of around the time COVID started, but perhaps before, perhaps after, the park became a tolerated sleeping zone.
Yes. Prior to that, you had to be out of the park by a certain time at night, and you had to sleep at least on the outside of the sidewalk, between the sidewalk and the curb. That's been the way of getting around the restriction, because there's actually University of California up to the sidewalk within the park, and outside of that, the restrictions as far as People's Park is concerned are not not used.
So, and because you do regularly pass by the park in the course of your work, right, more or less?
Yes.
In the earlier part of this year, and maybe last year, did you notice a lot of people sleeping on the sidewalks?
Oh, yeah. It really picked up. I can't remember the situation last year with regard to the weather and stuff like that. But people were sort of drawn to People's Park. It's looked upon as a haven, so to speak, where it's at this point, the haven is a little on the wild side.
So even though at the time when you saw people on the sidewalks, they were being banned from going into the park by police action?
Well, they couldn't sleep overnight from 10 till, 10 to 6 or 10 to 7.
Now, have you, you say you've been through the park and you notice it's kind of delineated into a number of different zones.
Well, different areas of interest. You got the dog section on one part of it, and then on the other side you have the encampments, the bulky encampments, must have been 20, 25 tents, and other sections where, where Food Not Bombs serves meals during the week. And then there's a section there where there's a lot of
substance use?
Yes, there's a lot of Candyman around there, if you know what I mean. And we ain't talking about M&Ms.
And have you any estimate as to the number of folks who are currently using the park as their residence the last time you went through? Oh.
40, 50 people.
Mm-hmm. And are many of these people vendors of street spirit, as far as you know?
Oh, I would say maybe 5 of those particular people in People's Park actually sell the street spirit, yeah.
In Santa Cruz, one of the issues for Food Not Bombs activist Keith McHenry has been he's often saying that there's an increase in the number of people who have been forced onto the streets because of rent evictions or rent raises. Is that the case here in Berkeley as far as your, as in terms of your experience?
Well, the folks that I deal with are people that that lost their housing lately. Most of the people that I work with are people that are chronic homeless. 5, 10, 15 years. And I'm able to follow them because I see them all the time, and we run their mail for them, and we see them at the meals. It's on a continuous basis. Every Sunday we have a Sunday breakfast, and I see them there on a continuous basis. And then we start doing our soup nights here on a Friday, which we started last week. Get to see people we don't necessarily see at the breakfast, but we only see we don't get to see them all the time, but when I start seeing them at the park, I said, wow, it's been a long time since I've seen you. And people tend to be moving around, and a number of people disappeared by the locations down in Oakland there, specifically the Radisson Hotel just off of Edgewater. And they said something about 300 rooms, they're going to be closing that down at the end of the month. But I just found out today, not only they're going to close that down, they're going to be shuffling those people that were in the Radisson as of the end of December. Those people, they haven't been able to find permanent housing. They have other locations that within a half a mile of the of that location there at Edgewater and the freeway, that they're going to be transferring them there. That remains to be seen, but that's what I've been told.
Now, these are Project Room Key people?
Yes.
And I heard a lot of criticism from Carol Denny about the mayor, Jesse Arguin's failure to make good on promises that she felt he made when he was running for office. And I know this may be, I don't know if it's controversial for you or not, it doesn't really matter to me whether it's controversial, because you're a man who's got his eye pretty closely on these things. Has the situation for homeless people markedly changed prior to the COVID emergency or pandemic or shutdown, or the change in toleration or even services? We noticed this in Santa Cruz, that there's more services, mostly to guard the middle class people from getting COVID from the folks who are outside, that fear. But before that happened, under Arguin's mayorship and the city council, did you see any improvement in the situation for homeless folks? And if so, what was that?
Well, it's the monies that the city was putting into the multiple hotels that they had rented out in toto along University Avenue and getting people in there. But at some point, the money's going to run out. And what's going to happen on the backside of that, when they're finally back out on the street and they got no choice about where they're going to be going or what they're going to be doing. And at that point, this virus might kick back or be reduced, but if that reduction doesn't come, it could get worse. And if we, instead of just having people sleeping on the streets, which there's a great number of people that do that, whether it's encampments or just literally just putting your sleeping bag up against the side of a wall on one of the main streets, it won't be people sleeping on the street. It'll be people dying on the streets and treated like just so many human remains over there and over there and over there and a couple along here. When that starts to happen, hopefully people will wake up and realize that much, much more has to be done, whether it's the city doing it, whether it's the mayor doing it, whether it's the federal government doing it, whether it's a matter of the secondary $1,200 stipend everybody seems to be chomping at the bit for. And, well, when's that money going to be here? I read about something about we're going to get another $1,200. I said, well, there's more to it than that. It's a matter of people considering the lives of other people that they don't necessarily see the depth of responsibility for. When they see that depth of responsibility, when they understand that, when they're impacted by something that they really care about, and because of the virus and the fact that we're not able to take care of one another, we're going to have to step down from our high level of living, lower it a little bit, and take some of that which we have, some of our resources, and use it to impact the situation out there. But the key situation is that depth of involvement, that personal involvement. And people have to figure out how that works for them. Maybe they don't want to be exposed to those kind of people because they are different, because they are homeless, because maybe they don't bathe as well as I do, and all the different other things. And the problem with drinking and alcohol and the drugs and everything. And then the other thing that seems to sort of go over everything, and that's mental health. And if we get to that point of where we can go and just give up on them, maybe that's going to be worse than this virus taking off and impacting the whole world and people just dying like flies.
Well, see, the question I had for you was really a somewhat different one, which had to do with when I came to Berkeley, and as I do pretty much every month to pick up street spirits from you, JC, I've usually noticed tents along the sidewalk. But there came a point at which suddenly there were very few tents on the sidewalk.
Around. They keep moving around. We had a whole bunch of tents over there on Herald Way, just around the corner from the post office. And they swept them all out of there, and they scooted around in front of the post office now on Alston Way and all these different places. It's like it's a continuing game of musical chairs.
Whack-a-mole, as they say.
Yes.
I just noticed along Shattuck there were some relatively regular groups of tents on the street corners.
Well, right over here there's
two
or three large ones here, and then going down one block here to Blake and Shattuck.
And
there used to be two on that one corner and the one there, and now there's nothing on the south southeast corner, and now there's just two left on the
I guess I noticed at one point that there was, for a period of time, there were a number of tents pretty much in a stable way along Shattuck Avenue for a couple of months almost. That's when, and I could have just hit them at the time when they weren't doing the sweeps. But then I came in and noticed for a couple of months there were a few tents, but there weren't many at all. And I wondered, is this because they were suddenly putting people, you know, forcing people away because they were putting people in houses? And this Radisson Hotel depopulation that you say is likely to happen, although now it's Newsom is saying he wants to continue to fund, because of this new COVID pandemic surge, still, is Berkeley itself accepting room key funding, or is it, because some cities are rejecting it, you know?
Well, it appears that the city is continuing with it. We'll have to actually see what happens at the end of December. I mean, it's not in that fiscal year or this fiscal year. Here in Berkeley, fiscal year starts in the middle of summer. So whatever monies they do or don't have to do this is monies that's there right now, and they don't reset the budget until the middle of summer. So it'll be crazy trying to figure out how to spend all that money, and the frustration that the taxpayers are being feeling that they're taking their taxes and it's being dumped out there on the street perhaps, and being very ineffective because the people just seem to continue, but their quality of lifestyle doesn't necessarily get upped by the fact they have housing. I believe that the fact of housing can do that, but the biggest difficulty with housing, beyond just getting a place for the people, is getting people acclimated to living inside again after an extended period of living out on the streets. And you go to some of these encampments and you see how much of a mess they are and how it's a visual sort of thing. You know, you got the piles of bicycle parts and bicycle wheels and throw-offs, and people try to collect things. They figure, well, if I got enough stuff that I've collected, I feel like I'm a little more comfortable because I've got some riches, even though they're marginal or questionable. And this is how they live, but to a great degree, perhaps the people that live inside houses have this same thing. They might be just as sloppy as anybody, but they're behind the walls of their house, and people can't see all this happening. Mm-hmm. So it's just that the people on the street, they're exposed.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm wondering is the... Well, in Santa Cruz, they are not, for example, providing for a winter shelter. There's no warming center or winter shelter, really. I mean, there is a private winter shelter that is opening only very limited basis because they don't have a lot of volunteers, they don't have much funding. Very dedicated people are involved in it, but it's limited.
How big is the capacity?
Well, he claims, that's Brent Adams' warming center I'm thinking of, that it's scalable. That is to say, he will not turn anyone away, he says. And in fact, since Santa Cruz has 500 to 1,500 homeless people, and this is initially, you know, was a building which housed 50 to 70 people at best, he's renting an additional series of spaces and setting up tarps for the outside areas so they can be kind of semi-inside areas. And so it's expanded, but he is raging about the city's refusal to open up what is another limited space, the Winter Armory Shelter, which, you know, easily isn't worth a shit anyway. I mean, it is, but in COVID times, you know, you have group shelters, which are reportedly, and I guess we'll find out more about this, more likely to spread. And what you need, of course, are individual SROs, which, of course, are being destroyed in the gentrification activity, which Carol Denny was talking about in a previous interview, how in Santa Cruz, that's one of the things she has concerns about the Arguin Council, that they are, in fact, forwarding a gentrification agenda rather than dealing with issues.
Well, the housing back there was a great difference. You go back 30, 40 years, and the existence of SROs was, they were peppered all over the place. When I first came to Berkeley, I lived in an SRO up at the corner of Haste and Telegraph, the Berkeley Inn.
Me too.
Okay. And I can't remember, I think I was paying just maybe $100, $125 or something when I was last there back at the late 70s. And if you were getting by a little bit of Social Security, your Social Security back in those days was probably $600, $700. And if you were paying $100 for your rent, I mean, that's a small amount. That's way less than 20% of your income. Whereas nowadays, Social Security's gone up to $1,000. Whoopee, but the rent's gone up to, you know, they just don't offer the opportunity at SROs now. So if you got yourself just a regular old apartment, it cost you a better part of $2,000. You just couldn't do it.
I guess my question is, though, have you noticed much, and maybe you're not following these projects, I often am not in Santa Cruz, much gentrification, upscale housing stuff. They call it affordable, but it isn't really affordable to poor people, working people, and particularly homeless people in the last couple of years under the liberal, progressive Arguin people.
Well, if they were to take these places they're putting together, the people that are funding it are obviously looking to make a profit, but if they didn't just offer like 10 or 15% of the housing there available to low income, which they could do that, but if they decided we're going to build this, they're going to build it with the idea we're going to make it just like for everybody, but we will only have people that are on greatly limited income that could be paying based on the federal laws and the restrictions for subsidized housing, they'd be paying about $300 a month for the individual to take care of that, and the balance of it would be paid by the different state and federal programs, you know, the Shelter Plus Care, Section 8, whatever it is. If they were to do that, that would really open up the situation for folks. They'd have to learn all over.
And we pause briefly while a fire department truck rushes
They'd
by.
They'd have to learn all over how to be living inside and having things that are their responsibility. Man, I got my own room, and I got myself a kitchen, and I got a bathroom, and I take a shower, whatever I feel about it. I don't have to go and make an appointment with somebody down a week ahead, and if I miss my shower, well, then I go 2 weeks without a shower. But I take a shower every day. Wouldn't that be nice? Well, if the housing was put together, the idea of taking care of the people on the low end and taking care of them first, perhaps the housing situation is put together and taking care of them only, and the people that got the bucks, they could afford the high-priced situations. Maybe this would draw down the cost of rents citywide, or maybe even better, nationwide, where people would be able to afford living inside. And if that were to happen, the face of homelessness would change greatly, because there wouldn't be a need for them to sleep out there on Shattuck Avenue, because they would be offered a decent situation and a place they could hold for a extended period of time. They wouldn't have to worry about getting kicked out because they were letting other people stay with them, because everybody would have a place. But all the bucks behind building all these things and satisfying the developers that are hungry to make lots and lots and lots of money, by going and dropping the cost of rentals, not just for the people on the low end of the scale, but all the way across, where we were to go backwards, and instead of having inflation eating up all of our dollars, having things out there where people need to have, first, they need to have access to housing. Not just access to housing, but access to affordable housing. And not just access to affordable housing, but access to affordable housing is something they can really cherish.
Well, also that they can really afford. I mean, you know, that's the problem.
That's what, yeah, affordable. I keep using that word affordable.
But I mean, what Carol Denny has said, and I see you got to get going here, is that you don't need to build more housing. There is plenty of vacant housing that could be used in this city this very night. If there were the will to do it, either the will from the people at the bottom who insisted on it, or the will from the good-natured churches and other communities that could address this issue, or just the realization that this has to be done. So you don't need new housing. You don't need to wait 30 years. It's here now. What's your response to that?
Well, you have a lot of lots, living spots here in Berkeley, where you have a house in front and you have a house in back. So let's say you own the whole plot, okay, but the front house and the back house, and you got the front house that you've got, and then the back house is going to be an income maker. But would you go and drop down from $1,500 or $1,800 a month, well, more than that probably, if it's a house as opposed to it's an apartment, you were able to take people in that, you know, between the state and the people's money that they, small amount they might get from Social Security, people would be willing to accept the fact that we're not going to be able to make those kind of bucks from our investment in the back lot.
Well, the casino owners in Havana had the same problem in 1958, but then for some reason they were suddenly all ousted and housing suddenly became available. What do you make of that?
I don't know. I actually don't have an answer for that.
I think it's true. I mean, I'm not a big fan of state capitalism or what they call communism. That isn't really communism over in Cuba and in these other countries. But I do note that it has had the impact of providing food, housing, and medical care for people who never got it and are still, to some extent, continuing to get it.
Well, we have to take care of one another, and we need to respect each other regardless of our social economic status, as the case may be.
Must we respect wealthy property owners who insist on keeping large tracts of property while other people are freezing outside?
Well, that's
get religion.
I mean, you know. It's not a matter of them getting religion. It's a matter of we are part of society. We are those that have the dollar in our pocket or those that don't even have a roof over our head. We're all part of the same society, but since we that have money versus we that do not have money are looked upon greatly different, if we were able to make sure that everybody had at least an acceptable minimum standard of living, then things could change. But it means those people that are on the high end of the scale would have to give up something. They do that by charging them a higher income tax. And those people on the low end of the scale that don't have enough money coming in, that can't afford things even when the prices are reduced slightly. Like here in Berkeley now, the student housing is thinned out a whole bunch because the students haven't all come here to school because they don't have to come here to school. All they have to do is get on their computer at night or during the day and live stream or Zoom, whatever it is, their classes, so they don't actually have to be here. I live in a two-unit condo. I live in the back. The one in front was sold back in March. When I bought my condo back in the mid-80s, it cost me $150. And the one in front was sold back in March, and they got $850 for it. And the gentleman that was supposed to move in there was supposed to be a student. And that was back in March when it was sold. And he still has not moved in. And the crazy thing is he may not move in. Because he's from China, and he can take his classes online as long as he has a good internet connection. So the housing availability is perhaps percolating to the top and say, look, we have all these empty places, whether they're student co-ops or places the students would take over, Barrington Hall, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. There are situations out there, and as those places become more and more visible, then perhaps that will be a part of the change. But the other thing that has to happen, if we have many people moving in from the streets into housing complexes or apartment buildings or whatever, it's pretty much going to take people that stay at that housing situation that would be like, I guess, social worker types.
Nannies.
well, nannies, that's an interesting way of it. But I guess that says it to some degree, and help the people get acclimated to living back inside again. That could change a lot of things. And if they all come, start living inside, you know what that does? That blows my job security. I go out on Sunday morning and people wouldn't come to our Sunday breakfast, but they could stay inside and have scrambled eggs and bacon on Sunday morning and not worry about it. Well, it's going to be raining over at People's Work.
We're able to find poor people somewhere else, I think.
I'm sure that we won't be eliminated entirely, but that would be a great way to lose my job if it were to come to that, that people would be cared about, or that we would learn to literally love our neighbor.
Mm-hmm. And next time we'll talk about, because that sounds like what you really are, you've been talking about here is the need to have additional social services for people to acclimate themselves to getting back into housing, chronic homeless people, and so forth. I've always been a big skeptic. And I think you can probably provide a lot of hands-on experience that might be able to tone down an old rager like myself on this issue, that what you need is housing first, and I mean also encampments first when you haven't got housing, but something, and worry later about providing all those wonderful jobs to all those social service people who are so willing to help you out, and then to supervise about what's going on. That I see a huge amount of money being wasted on that kind of shit, and we'll talk to you about it next time we talk, because I see you've been sitting here for far too long. And we've been talking with... Your name, sir, is...
J.C. Orton.
And for people to learn more about the Catholic Worker, they should...
Get online and read about it, connect with us, call us up on the phone. Even better, come on over and give it a shake, see what's going on, and participate. And not only just do stuff with us, maybe learn a lesson or two or an idea or a way of doing things, and then take that back to your own neighborhood, your own backyard, your own house, and extend that off to your family, extended family, the little kids at home, and all your friends. And, you know, effectively, cumulatively, we are going to change the world.
And next time we'll talk also about the impact of the situation in COVID on the children, the schools, and the businesses here in Berkeley versus the need to shut down in order to stop the spread of COVID. We'll talk to you about that again when we run into you in a month, assuming you're still with us, of course.
Maybe I'll be able to duck you at that point. We'll see what I can do.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to do that.
That was duck with a D, not the other one.
All I can say is quack, quack.
Okay.